Entering Kenmore, doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome to episode 33 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, bit of a tough road trip out west. The Red Sox ended up going 3-3 in Arizona and Oklahoma out there in the minor league ballpark. So all in all, kind of an interesting road trip for a number of reasons we'll get into, but how are you feeling overall?
It's weird because if we recorded on Monday, I would have been, the sky is falling. And I don't know how much stock to put into taking 2 out of 3 from a bad A's team in a minor league ballpark that happens to be one of the most pitcher friendly in baseball. So I think my concerns from the last episode, losing Roman Anthony, where's the offense going to come from, et cetera, are still there despite playing well. And then you come into this 3-game set against the Yankees, and it's probably the biggest series of the year because it's going to get you to the next biggest series of the year, which if you can win this one would be in Toronto next week, or in 2 weeks, I guess, with a chance to win the division. So it's like I still have my concerns about where the offense is coming from without Roman Anthony.
No doubt. And I agree. It seemed kind of spotty throughout this entire road trip. You had some blowouts in there, but obviously, like you said, that was a hitter's ballpark. And in Arizona, the bats were pretty quiet for the first two games. And you just saw a lot of inconsistencies throughout this entire lineup, which is, I think, a lot of what we can expect without Roman Anthony and kind of adjusting to seeing a lineup on a nightly basis without him.
Yeah, and I completely forgot about those Arizona games because those were like maybe the 3 most boring games of the year.
Oh,
comfortably,
yeah.
They were late at night. They were largely anemic offensively. If I still don't know, I've used that word like 10 times on the pod and don't know if I'm using it correctly.
I think that's right.
Let's see. Anemic. Suffering from anemia. Nope, that's not how we're using it.
No.
But I feel like I have heard. I don't know. Let me know. If anyone knows if I'm using that word correctly, let me know. But the
I
offense
don't even know
sucked.
How to spell it.
That's a way of saying the offense sucked. That much I do know. At least that's how I'm trying to use it. And like I said, those were the 3 most boring games of the year. Like, the offense was awful aside from the 8th inning on Friday. Peyton Tolley, which was for a lot of people the only reason they tuned in, was terrible because he can't locate any of his secondary pitches for strikes. And they showed a little bit of late life. And then was it Slayton that came in and just immediately shit himself? And I know we're going to get to Slayton.
So.
But yeah, so like that game sucked. On Saturday, like I already went bottom TV for that game with my college football TV set up. And then by like the 5th inning, it was all college football. Like the offense, again, just does nothing at all. I did miss the Rafaela catch in real time, though. So I guess there is that. But yeah, they should wipe those Arizona games from everyone's memory because I have wiped it from mine.
The high we went from Peyton Tolley's debut at Fenway, carving up the Pirates, going 5 1/3 strong, and then obviously Greg Weissert shit the bed immediately. But to go from that to his outing in Arizona, where he just got absolutely shellacked, and it just seemed like the Diamondbacks were sitting fastball because they knew he couldn't locate anything else. And
that's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the result you're going to get. And it's tough because everyone is super high on Peyton Tolley and still is. I mean, myself included. But it's tough if you only have one pitch, realistically. Like, if you can't locate your off speed for anything, then I just don't know how you really survive. I don't know where you're at on Tolley, because it seems like they're going to keep him in the rotation, at least. Obviously, in Oklahoma, they went shorter with him. He only went 2 innings. But at this point, it just seems like maybe they're out of options. So this is kind of what they get.
Yeah, I mean, I like long term, I'm not worried about Peyton Tolley even slightly. Like, this, we have to remember, this is his first full season as a professional baseball player. He started the year in A-ball. Like, this was, I said it on the last episode, this was never a part of the plan for this team. They never, ever thought that Peyton Tolley was going to push the issue this much to the point where they like almost had no choice but to call him up. So the secondaries need work. Yeah, we kind of knew that. But the fastball plays, it just doesn't play when, like you said, the Diamondbacks realized that they could just hunt the fastball. And was it the Perdomo at bat? 8 of the 9 pitches that he threw were fastballs. And then the 8-pitch Ketel Marte at bat, it was 7 of them. So, like, excuse me, if all you have is a fastball, like, obviously these are major league hitters. We're not in AAA anymore. Like, we're not in the minors anymore. Those guys are going to capitalize, but I think he's going to figure it out. Like, I tweeted it the other day. The pitching lab has done miracles on me during the Connolly early start. Like, I have faith in the pitching development, which is kind of a weird thing to say for the Red Sox. Not kind
totally. Of. Totally. And, I mean, you've seen it all year, more or less, like, with a bunch of different guys who you didn't really expect would make as much of an impact as they've been making this entire season. And, I mean, there's been a couple outliers. Dustin May, they couldn't figure out. Walker Buehler, they couldn't figure out. Jordan Hicks, I think, is just above everything, and he's a lost cause. So that's an outlier on its own. But overall, I think I'm still pretty confident in Tolley. It's just for this season, I don't know how much you're going to get from him until he starts developing those secondaries. And I don't expect that to happen overnight. Obviously, with a full offseason of work and getting more comfortable in the majors and everything like that, I'm pretty confident he will develop further. And like you said, it's a luxury at this point to even have him in the majors as a whole. So if you can turn him into, like, you know, a reliever, like an inning or two reliever for the rest of the season, I still think that has the potential to be a weapon out of the bullpen in the playoffs even.
Yeah, I just don't want to see him as like a starter, or I guess in this instance, it would be an opener.
Right.
If that's the path they're going to go, like, I'd rather see him come in for a pocket of lefties where he can just come out, let it bark, see the fastball tick up, because that's when, like, having a fastball as your only good pitch can play if it's ticking up out of the bullpen. So I think we kind of have to recalibrate our expectations for, like you said, what he's going to give us down the stretch. Don't think he's going to be the savior. I think we're back to game 4 of the World Series. Brennan Bernardino is starting.
Thank God.
So, yeah, so you're still kind of looking for that person to fill the hole in your rotation from after Bayo, Giolito, and obviously Crochet. I mean, like, I don't want to say, like, Connolly early, our nation turns its lonely eyes to you. Like, but that's kind of what does. It is now. Yeah, like, it's just whatever guy they call up next that performs well, that's who our nation turns its lonely eyes to. Like, if it's Cooper Criswell, if he ever gets healthy, it would be the same thing. Like, and I know we've talked about Cooper Criswell. I am not Cooper Criswell guy. I think he just got lucky in that start against the Astros, but yeah, so it's weird. Like, for a team that's, like, I don't want to say, like, all but a lock, but, like, that's effectively a lock for the playoffs. Like, I don't think they're going to miss. Like, to have this many question marks going into it, it's unfortunate.
Especially for a team that's missed the playoffs for the last, what, 3-4 years now? So,
yeah, 3.
So, to go back into the playoffs, and it seems like you're kind of whimpering to the finish line, I don't know what to expect, to be honest. And I guess that could be fun, because when you went into 2021, you weren't expecting a run to the ALCS, let alone being 2 games from the World Series. So
sure, but
anything like, can happen.
I guess, but, like, look at that roster compared to this roster. Like, where, like, when you look at that roster, you know exactly where the offense is coming from. When you look at this one, it's like, all right, like, maybe get a good Jaron Duranda, like, you facing a lefty, you probably got Trevor Story, and then you got Rob Ref Snyder, who had a hell of a series against the A's. You got Romy Gonzalez, who's been incredible. So, like, if you're facing a lefty, you're in good shape. But, like, I don't know. Like, it gets so circumstantial with, like, sure, like, if you face the Yankees, you're going to see Max Fried. So you get your Ref Snyders, you get your lefty killers. But I don't know. Like I said on the last episode, I think I feel good facing the Yankees, and then everyone else, it's like, oof.
I'm with you there. I think this Yankee series in particular will be a good measuring stick, because you haven't played them in a while without Roman Anthony. So it'll be good to see where you're at in terms of that. And Not to jump ahead here, but you do have your best three pitchers going in that series. So we'll see how it pans out. But a lot more to get to from these last two series. Did you have anything more on the Diamondbacks? I know it was kind of a nothing series in our eyes.
So, like, this isn't necessarily, like, just about the Diamondbacks series. I pulled up the numbers since the Roman Anthony injury, and the offense in runs scored is ninth in baseball, and in WRC+, they're 100, which is obviously league average, tied for 15th in baseball, but it doesn't feel like that at all. Like, we're talking so doom and gloom. By batting average, they're sixth. By slugging percentage, they're 11th. It just doesn't feel like that at all. I think it's just Oakland. Like, you played in Oklahoma for three games and you put up some decent numbers, and even like on Friday they put up five. Like, they're averaging five runs a game since Roman Anthony got hurt, and it just doesn't feel like that at all. Like, it feels like they've been mostly lifeless aside from three games.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention, they've been struggling to find a consistent leadoff guy now, because in Arizona, we had Masataka Yoshida leading off.
Hell yeah. Macho man.
So we could lead off the game with a ground ball to second base.
That should be the condition. Masataka Yoshida can hit leadoff, but he has to change his walk-up song back to Macho Man.
I mean, I can do without the Moana, to be honest. I love Moana,
No.
Here's the problem. You cannot be walking out to a song that's called You're Welcome when you have done nothing for me all season.
It's okay. You're welcome.
If it were anyone else but Masa, I think I'd be all in.
It's electric. Doesn't matter. It's electric. But I do fuck with the Moana, but he can lead off Macho Man. Like, that's all. I think that's a fair compromise. I'm unwilling to budge on it. So it's your move, Alex Cora. You come to the ideas, guys, for ideas, and I give you a great idea. Imagine Garrett Crochet comes out, punches out the side, immaculate inning, game one of the wild card. Now batting number seven, Masataka Yoshida. Macho man. Like,
when you put it like
place
that,
place goes nuts. Yes. See, exactly. Ideas, guys. Like, that's what we're here for. Like, you're welcome, Boston Red Sox. You have just been given another fantastic idea for free via the Enter and Ken Moore podcast.
But do we actually want Yoshida leading off?
I mean, no, but like I said, I'm willing to compromise. I think that is a more than fair compromise.
Yeah. Maybe I can get on board with that. But overall, I just think, we beat this drum so many times, but you can put Masataka Yoshida wherever you want. I'm confident it's going to be a ground out to second base.
73 OPS plus? Huh?
No.
Huh?
Nope. Can't do it.
But he's got aura.
There's no amount of aura that can save him in my eyes, at least this season. And I don't think he's going to be on the team next year. So
no, I don't either. And in all seriousness, he had three good games. And like last 7 days, it's a 188 batting average with a 423 OPS.
Yeah, he's got three for
16 in that time span. All singles, obviously. It's really bad. And they already shied away from using him in the leadoff spot. They went back to Duran, where he hasn't been that much better. I mean, he has the 9 plate appearances in the leadoff spot. Yoshida does. He's 1 for 9. And it was a single.
Yeah. So, like, you can't play him anywhere. That's the thing.
No, I mean, that's the issue with trading your best player, because you're paying Masataka Yoshida $18 million a year.
Yeah.
Like, this stat comes courtesy of our buddy Joe Weil, who gave it to me on Sunday, and now I present to you the updated statistics. Masataka Yoshida with 0 outs in an inning, 295 with a 919 OPS.
Okay.
Huh?
You lead him off. Didn't help him in the leadoff spot.
You lead him off. It's one guaranteed at bat with 0 outs in the inning. I don't know. I'm presenting the facts. Holy shit, he's hitting 150 with runners in scoring position.
That's my DH.
Another great opportunity to get him up with nobody in scoring position.
I guess, but that only really applies to the first batter of the game.
Sure. Listen, I'm looking for positives in Masataka Yoshida. That's all I'm doing. But I just, I don't know. I'm presenting the facts. But like I said, in all seriousness, they've already moved to Duran. So I'm so sick of seeing Masataka Yoshida on this baseball team.
This has been your, I guess, daily Masataka Yoshida rant, if you want to consider each episode a day. I don't know. I don't know what to call it. Episode
weekly. Yeah.
Weekly, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Weekly anyway. Masataka Yoshida rant. But I don't know. Think about it with the Macho Man leadoff thing. I'm just
just let it simmer, let it cook overnight, put it in the slow cooker.
I think that would go pretty hard. Like, is it Bryson Stott or Alec Bohm? Who has like the, I don't know the name of the song, the Living in a Big Blue World.
I think it's called AFK.
Okay.
I don't know which one of those it is.
It's one of those two. Yeah, it's one of the mid Phillies left side of the infield. Yeah,
Gunnar Henderson looking guys.
Well, Gunnar's walk up song goes brazy too. It's a Sweet Escape.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Goes crazy. It's the woo-hoo.
Mm-hmm. That's wee-hoo. A good one. I will say, a lot of athletics players had good walk-up songs.
You know, I can't really notice that.
The only reason I noticed is because the effects were bumping in the in the radio booth, but...
Oh, at least you got that. At least you got effects. I got OB and Lou yapping.
Oh,
no offense to them. It's just not what I'm looking for. On my Nat sound fader of the Spanish radio broadcast.
Yeah, not quite going to get it done there.
Yeah, no. But pulling up the numbers for Duran, this year hasn't been very effective in the leadoff spot. He hasn't been very effective as a baseball player. Really, 260 batting average with a 755 OPS. Last year, it was a 280 batting average, 286 with a 835 OPS. Like, it just isn't happening for Duran, except in like small spurts. So like, how consistent can he be? And if it feels pretty grim to be like looking at this offense since the injury, and it's a top 10 offense and runs scored, being like, oh, like it the sky is falling. But again, like, I think we have to, there's a difference between box score watching and using context clues. And I don't know, like, how much stock are you putting into this?
I just don't think you really have a choice besides leading off Duran, just because he's done it before. Oh, what's happening?
Tucker Kraft touchdown.
Do the Commanders still have 3 points?
No, they got 10 now. I don't know how they got the 10.
I don't either.
I just happened to look up and I bet on Tucker Kraft. So.
Oh.
Nice.
Anytime touchdown or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's good. Not good. Team, because Jane Daniels has been laying an egg.
Yeah, I don't know how they scored their touchdown.
It was a 20-yard pass to Zach Ertz, according to Sleeper.
My ball's Zach Ertz.
What were we talking about? How much stock do I take in
the
lineup?
The A's. Yeah, in the performance. Like when I read you the numbers of ninth in baseball in runs scored, sixth in baseball in batting average, 11th in OP or in slugging percentage. Like how much, like, what do you, like, what does that make you think?
I like just the eye test, I think, is the most important for me. And obviously we watch all of these games and it still doesn't look great. So it's just hard for me to be super confident in this offense without Roman Anthony on a nightly basis. And until I'm proven wrong, I think this Yankee series, like I said, is a measuring stick. If you can take 2 out of 3 from, I'm not willing to call them a good team, but a playoff team, then I think you might still be in good shape. Like, you're playing a couple contenders down the stretch here. You got the Blue Jays, and the Tigers may not care by the time the final regular season series comes around. But even still, I think you just have to see how they do against those teams and go from there. You don't really have a choice right now. Like, you're pretty confident. I feel pretty confident in saying they're going to make the playoffs. I don't know what happens after that at all.
The Sutter Health Park is second in terms of park factor. Yeah. Second most hitter friendly, 108 park factor. So yeah, if just for contrast, Coors is for home runs a 111 park factor. Sutter Health Park is a 110.
It is interesting though that they got two. I mean, on the pitching side, they got two shutouts. If I'm not mistaken, right in the first and second game.
Yeah, first two. Yeah, so, I mean, okay, but like one of them is Garrett Crochet, which I guess we can use that as one segue to get into both of those outings actually by both starters. But like, I don't know, like the A's, like they're an up and coming team. They can be feisty at times, but they're such an all or nothing offense. It's just like sometimes they're gonna put up like eight on you, and other times they're not going to score at all. Like, they're not an offense really that's going to score like two or three runs and lose. Like, they're either going to really pile it on or like completely suck. And like they have Nick Kurtz and Jacob Wilson, and aside Brent from Rooker. That, like, yeah, oh yeah, 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 Brent Rooker. But like aside from that, like
Langoliers,
I do like Langoliers. Okay, so they got four players. Four. Yeah, Tyler Soderstrom's hot and cold. Lawrence Butler sucks. like, he is so bad. Lawrence Butler is awful. Like, I don't watch a ton of A's games. Like, I do find myself watching a lot. Like, I just looked at my MLB TV game statistics, and the Padres were my most watched team. Obviously, that's skewed because I can't watch the Red Sox on there. But, like, it usually is, like, a couple years ago, it was the Mariners. Like, it usually is a West Coast team because I like to tune into those games late. But like, so I've tuned into some A's games, but like, yeah, Lawrence Butler's awful. Like, that's my takeaway from those A's games, is that Lawrence Butler fucking sucks.
But I will say it's encouraging to see Crochet bounce back the way he did.
Yeah, he absolutely diced through that lineup, and it was something that I looked at before his start. The A's were top five, I want to say it was. I can pull it back up. In strikeouts in the league against lefties, so. I obviously not the strongest lineup in the world, but he wasn't really beating any lineup in the world these last couple outings. So like, to see him bounce back, like, I mean, some of the takes got so out of control with Garrett Crochet after that last outing. Like, sure, obviously it was the worst outing of his career, but for people to be like, now we don't even know what we're gonna get out of Crochet in game one, like, yeah, I'm pretty sure we do. Like, it's gonna be okay. Like, let's all take a deep breath. I promise you, we know what we're gonna get out of Garrett Crochet. And so for him to come out and just immediately put his nuts back on the table, 101 pitches, 10 shut, 10 strikeouts. Like, it's good to see. Like, everything was working well for him, and especially the fastball, which was concerning because the velocity was starting to tick down a little bit, if I remember correctly, in that Cleveland start, and he was relying more on the cutter as opposed to the fastball.
Yeah, and going off of that, it's cool to see that he still has it, because it was tough there for a little while. Obviously, I think August was his worst month of the season, probably by far. But I mean, like I said before, what other choice did you have but leaning on Crochet in the playoffs? And now, obviously, you feel a little bit more comfortable with that. We'll see how he does. He's scheduled to pitch on Sunday against the Yankees.
Honestly, I would have felt so comfortable no matter what. Like, he could have fucking sucked the rest of the way, and I would have been like, doesn't matter, it's Crochet day.
I think the people who were hitting the panic button, just, I don't know, like, you're either in or you're out at this point. Like,
interestingly enough, August was not Crochet's worst month of the season. In fact, it was July where Crochet posted a 275 batting average against.
Okay.
And let's see, a 678 OPS against, and technically September is now tracking to be his worst month by OPS with a 740 OPS, but that is that's pretty heavily aided by the four home runs that the Guardians hit off of him.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
Overall, bottom line, I'm not worried about Garrett Crochet. I'm glad he's back to dominating and dicing up lineups. and I think we'll go from there.
Oh, but like, but by ERA, August was his worst month.
That's what I assumed. Yeah, I didn't know about the under the hood stats.
That is crazy. 1.73 ERA. Well, I had to have been looking at the wrong thing here in July. He gave up 5 runs in July on 28 hits. There's no way that's a 2.75 batting average.
No. And that can't be his worst month.
No. No, it's not. A 1.73 ERA. Right. What the fuck is... It just says months, and then those are the stats it gives. And then it says months game level. And then that's all of his actual stats. I blame Baseball Reference for this one.
Oh, Baseball Reference is a mess.
What the fuck is that? Yeah, there's no way that's what it was. Yeah, so August was his worst month by ERA.
All right, I rest my case.
Hand up. Just hand up. Baseball
Reference. It's all good. Trying to think back. I'm like, where did he struggle in July?
The Cubs? Did he pitch against the Cubs?
I don't think so. Because Giolito started.
Dodgers. But they went to Philly.
Yeah.
I don't know when he pitched. I feel like he did pitch. He pitched Sunday against the Cubs.
Oh, was it Giolito, Bayo, Crochet?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, obviously that's what it is because that's what it is for this Yankee series. So.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Garrett Crochet is back. I don't think he left. But
he is back.
Baseball Reference. Zach versus Baseball Reference. Baseball Reference takes this round. Takes the inaugural round.
So Crochet got the opener against the Athletics of Oklahoma, and then Connelly Early made his major league debut, and he might rival Peyton Tolley for the most electric debut I've ever seen, because oh my god, a 5-shot, 11 strikeouts, tying the Red Sox record with some guy record. I've never heard of.
Yeah, I also had never heard of him before. They were electric in different ways, too.
Yeah.
Tolley was kind of like, obviously, he was like making faces on the mound. He was like, he was doing, I mean, like Peyton Tolley was being electric in the way that someone who's 6'6", like 250, is electric. And Connelly Early was electric in the same way, in the way that someone that's 6'3", 195 is electric. Like, they would pan to him in the dugout, and he'd be, like, jumping up and down. He'd be repeating his delivery over and over again. Like, he'd be doing everything. Like, and he was unbelievable. And the fastball is similar to Tolley's, but not as good, but the secondaries were just so much better. Like, he got so much chase, so many whiffs. He led the league in whiffs on Wednesday. Was that start? Tuesday. Tuesday night. Yeah, he led the league in whiffs on Tuesday night. And correct me if I'm wrong, Skeens pitched Tuesday? Or was Skeens yesterday?
I think Skeens was yesterday.
Let me see if I can find the list from the whiffs. You definitely can. Let's see. That was Tuesday. Here we are.
Skeens was yesterday.
Yeah, Connelly Early, 19. Emmett Sheehan, Boston College legend. Shout out. 18. Spencer Strider, 16. Ranger Suarez, 15. Like, these are like incredible pitchers.
Good company.
Really good company. He leads it in whiffs. Guy that I don't think very many people knew about, certainly before this season, but even like I think when the majority of people got like looked at the front and were like, Boston is calling up Connelly Early, like who the fuck is this guy? Like for him to come out and do that, like how many people were like, they're starting some scrub, so I'm not watching this game. It's a 10:05 first pitch, and this is the outing that they missed. Like,
yeah, sucks.
Was incredible. Yeah, like, and I do think it's a cautionary tale now. Like, if this had happened with Connelly Early, where he went out and dealed and tied the MLB debut strikeout record for the Red Sox, and it was before everything happened with Peyton Tolley. Like, if it just happened, if it happened on Saturday against the Pirates, we would have been like, I don't even, it would be graphic if I were to describe what our rooms would look like in for that podcast.
Oh, Jesus.
But I feel like I'm kind of like tempering my expectations because, yeah, Connelly Early looked great against a bad lineup who had never seen him before. And we saw Peyton Tolley do that literally 2 weeks ago and then saw him look not good in his subsequent two starts. I do think that I have a little bit more faith in Connolly early to keep this up at a more more consistent pace, because like I said, those secondaries are more polished than Peyton Tolley's. So we'll see what we get. I think he's slated to start on Monday, I think it is. Must be, because he's not starting the Yankee series. So it'd be Monday, or they're off Monday, so Tuesday against the A's.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's another thing, to face this exact same lineup again, or maybe not the exact same, but the same team a week later, that'll be a good test to see, you know, how the A's adjust and also how he adjusts to
seeing. And usually that, when you face the same pitcher in such quick succession like that, the results tend to favor the offense.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, but I'm very much in agreement with you that it seems like a more complete pitcher right now than Peyton Tolley in Connolly early. And I think he honestly probably is your game four starter at this point. Like, what other option do you have?
Brennan Bernardino.
I can't. All jokes aside, if they go to a bullpen game in a potential game four of a division series,
I think I told that story that Bradfo had with Mike Hazen after the D-backs lost the World Series. They were like, he was like, I didn't do enough. He's like, what do you mean you didn't do enough? He's like, we had a bullpen game in game four of the World Series. What do you mean? Like, that's the, and Bradfo also had the story today, which I guess we can touch on either right now, or if you want to push it to later, that works as well. That Breslow is going to make hiring a general manager a high priority this offseason, which I think is something that should have been done 2 weeks after he was hired. But so we'll see where that comes from. Like, we've seen him have a whole lot of deficiencies, like specifically around the trade deadline. Like, I think he was brought in as like, he was an ex player. He knows how to like handle a clubhouse and what it means to give a clubhouse a boost. And then has laid an egg at his first two deadlines. Like, Heim Bloom could have done this, and we still would have had a cool nickname like the Bloominati. I wouldn't have to hate him for trading Rafael Devers. we'll see who that is. Where am I going with this? Oh, the fourth starter. I don't know. Like, it honestly might be Connolly early. Like, who do you turn to? Like, it can't be a bullpen game.
Certainly not Dustin May if, like, he comes back.
2-2. So, or I guess it would be game four, but 2-1. You're on the road, and you either need to win a game on the road to effectively keep your season alive or take a stranglehold on a series. And it's Brennan Bernardino, our nation turns its lonely eyes to you. Like, no. Which it's only for one inning. So, like, then what is the plan after that? Like, okay, here's Brennan Bernardino opening for Kyle Harrison. Like, Harrison looked fine yesterday. Yeah. I he didn't jump off the page at me. He didn't overly impress me. He was out there, and I kind of have the same thoughts on him that I had before. I think he's just a guy.
I agree. And I think with the upside of one of these young guys, whether it be Tolley for an inning or two and then early, or I would prefer early for, you know, four or five and then Tolley, or see what happens from there. But I think you kind of have to go with early right now in game four. And obviously this could change if he gets roughed up in his next couple starts. But what do you have? At most three more starts until the playoffs. And if he's still
four, they are 15 games left. So three more starts.
Yeah. So if he is anything close to what he was in his debut, I think you have to go with him as your fourth starter in the playoffs.
Yeah, you don't, like I said, you don't have a choice. We'll see how it all plays out, but it's like, I don't know. That doesn't instill a ton of confidence in me either, though. Like, okay, Connolly early, like, it's been good for four starts. Go out there against the Yankees and win us this series. Or, like, obviously that wouldn't be possible in the current scenario, but, like, Connolly early, you're heading into Toronto for game four of the ALDS. What do you got for me? it's like, oh man, it's, yeah, the fact that they have gotten, like, it is honestly astonishing that they have gotten this far into their pitching depth. Do you have any idea how unlucky they have to be Connelly early deep into their pitching depth? Like, I'm not going to revisionist history the Quinn Priester trade, because I echoed that I loved it. I was like screaming from the mountaintops that I loved that trade when it happened. And I still think that I would make that deal 10 times out of 10, even knowing where they are. Like, it just didn't seem like Priester was going to figure it out here. And they got an incredible return with a pitcher whose name escapes me. Yoferi Rodriguez, and then the comp balance pick that turned into Marcus Phillips out of Tennessee, which is like not only is it a comp pick that you get, but you also get the money associated with that comp pick. So it like completely changed the trajectory of their draft and how they could operate. So like, I think that for Quinn Priester, who's a guy who at last I checked had a FIP that was almost a full run and a half higher than his ERA.
Jeez.
Like, I just don't see Quinn Priester being that guy moving forward. It's why I traded him 2 weeks ago in my dynasty league. 3.25 ERA and a 4.19 FIP. So it's slightly lower than it was when I had last looked when I made that trade. It's just like, so Richard Fitz has gotten hurt. Hunter Dobbins' knee exploded. Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford, Walker Buehler sucked and had to get outright released, not even DFA'd. Cooper Criswell hurts. Like, who am I missing?
Patrick Sandoval.
Patrick Sandoval never coming back. Patrick Sandoval dead.
Patrick Sandoval dead in the Bronx.
Oh no, is that Austin Eckler?
Uh-oh.
Oh no, is that Jaden Daniels? Oh no, it's Austin Eckler.
This is totally off the rails, but has Buehler pitched for the Phillies yet? I don't think he has.
No, so he got taken to the fucking woodshed wearing like Scooby-Doo uniforms for the Lehigh Valley. Whatever their AAA team is. It was in the first inning. He gave up an absolute tank wearing one of the novelty uniforms.
Oh, no.
It was a really tough look for Walker Buehler. That is quite unfortunate. I do not have an RB2 in one of my fantasy leagues, and it was Austin Eckler. that blows. Jeez. But nobody cares about my fantasy football team. So it is astonishing that this is where we're at in the pitching depth. I don't know, like, what happens, like, God, knock on wood, God forbid, one of these guys goes down.
We're screwed.
Or Kyle Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Harrison, we believe in you.
But I also think it's a testament to the pitching lab and the pitching depth that you're still somewhat comfortable, I would say, in this rotation. And it helps that you're getting
comfortable in your top three.
Yeah. I mean, behind that, it's a couple question marks, but I think it's also cool just to see what the future of this rotation could look like. And you weren't necessarily expecting to see either of these guys this year. So I don't know. I mean, obviously I would prefer not to have needed to rely on them down the stretch here, but I think the early returns are still pretty encouraging.
Oh, absolutely. It's just like it wasn't like an indictment on them. Mm-hmm. If anything, it's a testament to that. Like you said, a testament to them, a testament to the pitching lab. It's just like, I cannot believe this is how far we've gotten in the depth chart. Like, these guys, Connelly early was, I believe, started the year at double A this year. And And like we said, Peyton Tolley started the year in high A, and it was his first professional season. Like, unbelievably unlucky. It's such a baseball cliche, and it's the same thing in football or with offensive linemen. Like, everyone needs one. Like, it, you can never have enough pitching.
Yeah, totally agree. And weekly Scherzy Wall rant is, I am mad that I can't purchase a Connelly Early shirt jersey this week. Last week it was Peyton Tolley. This week it's Connelly Early, and still none of them are in sight. So
I feel like people listening and watching, plug, shameless plug to the YouTube, Entering Kenmore, like and subscribe. Like, I feel like these people are joking, like, or think we're joking, like, oh, like, I can't believe I couldn't get a Nathaniel Lowe shirt jersey or a Peyton Tolley shirt jersey.
It would be hanging right there.
I think I've said this on the original clip to hashtag bring back the jersey wall. But, like, I have a Xander Bogart 72 jersey. I have a Will Middlebrook 64. I have a Andrew Benintendi number 40. Like, I have a fucking Yoan Moncada jersey. Like, like it, I am so dead serious with the jersey wall that I would have every single one of these guys' jerseys, like, almost immediately, especially with how often we go to the park now. Like,
yeah.
I would have every single one of these guys' jersey, and they could join my collection of all of those miscellaneous numbered jerseys that I got upon debuts.
Oh, I guarantee you both of us would have a number 48 Roman Anthony jersey.
Yes, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And boots on ground for the debut game, and he's wearing 48. I, like, there is no doubt in my mind I would have had a Roman Anthony 48 jersey.
It's just absolutely criminal how hard it is to rep these young players. Like, it's just impossible. And even if you go online and are like, oh, I want a custom jersey made, it's like $200. And you can't even get custom shirt jerseys anymore.
And it's funny to, like, it is funny to spend $40 on a number 70 Peyton Tolley jersey, a number 48 Roman Anthony jersey. But like you said, these authentic jerseys are like $200. It's not funny to have spent $200 on a number 48 Roman Anthony jersey. Like, that is not funny.
Could get five shirt jerseys for that price.
I could have early Tolley, Nathaniel Lowe, Roman Anthony number 48. Like, unbelievable. Like,
I might have splurged for a Cooper Criswell.
This is what they have taken. Let's not get crazy.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Another Whitlock.
Oh. Dude, if I could have bought a 72 Whitlock shirt jersey, I mean, come on.
You have a jersey, though. I'm not opposed to getting like a Peyton Tolley jersey, but I'm not getting a number 70 jersey. That's for sure.
And how long until these guys change their numbers? Like, Tolley's been through three starts now and he's still number 70. Is that just never happening?
Because they've always made guys wait, is the thing. Like, everyone's at, yeah. Like, so, like, in Marcelo got a good number in 10, but his handle is 10.
Oh,
That's what it was. Yeah. 30, he has 39, which is a fine number, but his handle is 10. So, like, we know he's going to 10 at some point. Like, Christian Campbell, I like 28. I just don't know that 28 fits a, like, Christian Campbell built guy.
It's a JD Martinez build.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Which is, like, exactly why. Oh, Debo, let's go. Big day for my fantasy team. Tucker Craft. Yeah. Well, aside from the passing of Austin Eckler, who just got carted to the locker room.
Oh,
as my
when you said passing, I was like, what?
No. His knee exploded or something in his leg exploded.
Oh, dude, the Kroski Merritt stock is off the charts.
Yeah, well, what about the Tank Bigsby, Ray Davis, or Kyle Monongai? Stock, because those are my only other running backs on my roster. Besides Bijan. I got Bijan too. So I really just need
waiver wire diving there.
I already texted in the group chat. Anyone want to trade me a running back?
Code red.
Yeah. But I don't even know where I was going with that. I don't even know what we were talking about.
Tolley numbers, Christian Campbell, 28.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's 100% what it is. It's just JD Martinez is number 28. So, like, to see anybody, like, maybe not anybody else, but, like, I think they have to have a JD Martinez-type build.
I think if Nathaniel Lowe were wearing 28, it would make more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make more sense. Campbell feels like a single-digit number guy to me.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think all of them are either retired or taken, though.
Yeah, like, but I don't know. Like, number 7 doesn't really feel like it.
No.
See, this
is there a number? Is anyone wearing number 5? Am I stupid? I don't think so.
I feel like no. Not since Kike.
Oh.
This is great radio.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it's auto-corrected to 52. I know William Abreu wears 52. No, 52. No one's wearing 5.
5 so, could work.
Yeah. I don't know. He's not even with the major league team right now. That's another surprising thing is that they didn't call him back up in September.
Yeah, I think the batted, like the results are good, but the batted ball numbers aren't great. Mm-hmm. Still not making like super hard contact. Like, I don't know. They did have him playing right field and said that they were going to ramp down the first base play with him for now. I don't know what that says long term, but I know the Sox prospect guys have been saying outfield like for quite a while. In terms of his long-term home. So that wouldn't surprise me, but I also don't want anything to do with Christian Campbell playing right field at Fenway Park. So
absolutely not. You can't put him in center.
I'd be more comfortable with him in center than.
But what are you going to do with Rafael then?
I think it's just everybody moves over to the right. Like in, I guess that's a good segue into the William Abreu injury.
Yeah.
Sam Kennedy on the Greg Hill show this morning said that he thinks that he's just such a gamer and he was pushing like so hard to get back sooner that he like in turn set himself back. And we really haven't seen too much of an update. We know it's not going to be this weekend, maybe next weekend. He's only running right now. So it's it goes back to the offense. There's such lack of pop in this lineup. Like I don't understand how they score runs. Like they just find ways to manufacture runs. They don't hit home runs. Did we pod since I tweeted the numbers on before and after the Rafael Devers trade?
I don't think so.
Obviously these numbers are different now. Oh, it's an Achilles injury immediately for Austin Eckler. That's good.
That was a quick diagnosis.
That's good. Let me see if I can find these numbers quickly, but they essentially just have no pop in the lineup. And here it is. Red Sox before trading Rafael Devers, 89 home runs, 9th in baseball. Red Sox after trading Rafael Devers, 80 home runs, 21st in baseball. That was on the 5th. So last Friday. So obviously those numbers are skewed a little bit. They've hit home runs since then, but either way, like I don't think they've jumped from 21st to top 10.
Doubt it.
In a week. So I just it's weird that they're manufacturing runs like this, and without Williers bat in the lineup, like there isn't really a guy that like can get up there, and if you have a man on first and down by two, you're like, all right, we have a chance to tie this with one swing here.
The other thing is I think you would feel a decent amount better about the Roman injury if Willier Abreu was playing every day, because that is a big bat in the middle of your lineup who can hit for power and play good defense. And you're missing both of those right now. You have Rob Refsnyder in right field who looks sluggish out there. And he tried to make a diving catch in Arizona. It's been rough for him, and he's a lefty killer, but when you try to do more with him, it usually doesn't happen. So
yeah. He was great though.
Mm-hmm.
In Oklahoma.
Yeah, like, he was.
I agree with you though. Especially at Fenway, we
can't do it.
Yeah. We do not. Like that's why even if the long term, there's only 15 games left in the season, but like even if the answer is Rob Refsnyder in left field, like it still move everyone else over. Rafael to right, Duran to center. But I also I don't think it should be Rob Refsnyder every single day. Like I'm pulling up the numbers right now. It's a 632 OPS versus righties, 231 batting average compared to a 986 OPS, 312 batting average versus lefties.
And as of right now on your major league roster, really the only other option is Nate Eaton. So I just don't understand why they wouldn't.
Their only options are lefty killers pretty much.
Right. So that's why I'm like, why wouldn't you call up Christian Campbell or Yostinkston Garcia?
That's the question for me. Like, I don't think we're going to see Campbell. Like, I think every time they get asked about Campbell, they're like very cagey about it. And they're like, it's pretty much like exactly that. Like, that's pretty much what they say word for word. And so, but like, we didn't get an extended look at Yostinkston Garcia.
Not at all.
Like what did they see that was so awful? And also, I say that Nate Eaton, lefty killer, but he's hitting 330 against. Okay, it's only 19 plate appearances, but
against all right.
In 237 in 43 plate appearances against. Like, I'm sorry. I like Nate Eaton. Seems like a fine guy.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Eaton does not have a place on a playoff caliber baseball team. I don't care if it's September and you get two extra spots. It's not September 10 years ago when you got 15 extra spots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the type of player that Nate Eaton is. Like, what the fuck is Nate Eaton doing on this roster? I just got myself so worked up about that, and I didn't even realize I was worked up about that. Like, what the fuck is this guy doing here instead of guys that are actually going to be a part of your future? 28 years old, posting an OPS plus of 84, a negative 0.2 war. He's a supposed lefty killer, and he fucking sucks against lefties.
It's tough. I mean, I didn't really like the idea of Nate Eaton up here pretty much all season. Yeah. I've complained when they've tried to bat him leadoff, and now I'm complaining that he seems like an everyday player when you have better options in AAA.
Like,
just doesn't make sense.
Him being up over Nick Sogard, I thought was ridiculous at the time, but now that I further watch Nick Sogard play, I'm like, what are we doing here? Like,
they have Sogard playing right field.
Nick Sogard's a nice little player.
Yeah,
like, I don't know, like, he's a winning ball player, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can say that about Nate Eaton. And, mm-hmm. like, I forget who it was that had the quote. Maybe Ed Hands. I don't know. If you're listening to this and this is your quote, good quote. But he said, like, if you show up to the ballpark, this was Nate Eaton, obviously. Or not, Nick Sogard said, if you show up to the ballpark on one day and I'm in the lineup, you might not notice me, but if you show up for 30 days in a row, you're going to watch me play and say, that's a nice player. That's a good player.
And he was the hero in the finale of the D-back series. Without him, who knows what happens? He obviously had it was a 2 RBI double in the top 9 there, I think.
Yes. Top 8? Something like that.
Late innings. Game winner right there. And since then, I think he's been pretty good. And he's also kind of a super utility guy. I know I was big on make Seydon Rafaela a super utility guy. I'm going to eat my words on that.
I wouldn't go that far.
What?
He's a fantastic defender. He has
in center field.
Yes, he has like the second worst OPS in baseball since the All-Star break.
Yeah, but
like at this point,
out there, that's the thing.
Yeah, like at this point I don't blame the, like, at first I kind of blamed the at bat thing to, or like the poor plate appearances thing to him playing second base, but now I don't even think it's that. Like, now I think he's just not playing good baseball right
he's
now.
It's streaky. A
512 OPS in a 188 batting average in 188 plate appearances.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. I'm not trying to tell you it's good, but I think you take the defense and get what you get at the plate. Because
a WRC plus of 36.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been good, but
Cody Clemens, Angel Martinez, Tyler Freeman. This is the Nick Castellanos. This is
there's a drive into left field by Castellanos. It will be a home run. He's
20 points lower on the WRC plus than all of those guys.
Yeah, it's been bad. No way around it. But you don't have another choice.
Pete Crow, and I saw an article from TJ Stats a while back that said Seydon Rafaela and Pete Crow Armstrong are essentially the same players. PCA has just figured out how to lift the ball in the air. PCA has also been awful since the All-Star break. He's right there on this list too, with the 16th worst OPS. Like, it's going to be peaks and valleys. And I guess the defense is enough to justify that. It's just like when your lineup is looking for a source of offense, like, someone has to step up, and it only magnifies the guys that aren't even more. like, now we can look at Seidon Rafaela, and, like, I feel like he's kind of skated for that two-week span that he had just before the All-Star break. But, like, they have to score runs somewhere, and this is a guy that we've seen it from before. Like, whatever it is, he's, like, he's chasing it. He's swinging at shit again. He's chasing pitches up at his eyeballs. Like, he doesn't seem to have any approach all over again. Like, whatever it was that he unlocked for those 2 weeks, like, they desperately need him to find it again.
And I mean, they desperately just need some consistency from this lineup as a whole. And I think
you can survive with his glove or with the bat. If his glove is, or like, what am I trying to say? You can survive the bat because of his glove. If you have an offense that can hide him, like we saw that with Jackie right. Bradley Jr. It's just that, like, right now they don't have an offense good enough to hide that kind of like misery at the plate.
I'm with you. I just don't think they have another choice. Like,
no, they, it's just, I mean,
kind of where they're at.
Yeah. They do. And again, like, I'm not even talking about for the rest of this year. I more so long-term, like, they have too many outfielders. Like, that much is clear. And at some point, Craig Breslow is going to go to kick this can even further down this road, and it's going to be one of those, like, Wile E. Coyote, like, fake roads, and he's just gonna wind up, and he's just going to kick a brick wall.
Well, maybe that's why he's trying to find a GM, so he can deal with it instead, or she can deal with it instead.
That's true. And, like, part of me, I've been a big Raquel fan for a while, mm-hmm. just back on the GM stuff, but I kind of just shouldn't be anybody in the organization.
Absolutely, like, not.
We have the same echo chamber of people between, and by all accounts, they're all great people and great at their jobs, but it's the same echo chamber of Raquel and Eddie Romero and BOH and Groupman and whoever else you want to lump into things. I mean, even Theo Epstein, like, some of these people actually have Theo ties. So, like, I just want it to be someone that is not here anymore. Like, Dave Dombrowski probably made the wrong choice in Tony La Russa, who we quickly saw falling asleep in the manager's chair at White Sox games.
Oh, dear.
But, like it just has to be someone from outside the organization, and I need somebody with experience. Like, I just need someone with a lot of experience, especially on the trade front. Like, it feels like everything else Breslow is pretty good at, but the trades are like, I don't want to say they're awful because you have the Crochet trade in there, but, like, holy shit, Vaughn Grissom for Chris Sale. Like, we're actually never going to see Vaughn Grissom on the Red Sox again.
No.
Like, he's on the 60-day IL now. He's been in a walking boot since, I think it was August 8th, Chris Cotillo said. So, like, no funny business there. That's how they created the 40-man spot for Connolly early, but he doesn't hit velocity. You had to pay Chris Sale to go pitch for the Atlanta Braves and win the Cy Young for a guy that, if it's above 93, he can't touch it. And if it's a breaking ball, he can't touch it. And if it's off speed, he can't touch it. Like, like, what a catastrophe of a trade that was. Back-to-back deadline duds. Like, it's just, it hasn't been good on the trade front aside from Garrett Crochet.
Not at all. And I am interested to see how this GM search goes, because I'm also curious how this dynamic would work between Breslow and a new GM. And, you know, obviously who handles what remains to be seen. But yeah, some help in the trade market is definitely needed, because I think he's just been too hesitant to move on from some of these guys. And I will say, like, a lot of people wanted Merrill Kelly at the deadline. I don't really think either of us had him at the top of our lists, but one of the names that was being floated a lot in a potential deal was Connolly Early. And for Joe Ryan, it was Peyton Tolley. So, you know, early returns there are, maybe Breslow was smart for not trading them, but I think this offseason he's going to have to get on
early. Yes. But I think if they traded, I mean, fuck, I was here saying I'll drive Peyton Tolley, Justinson Garcia, and Franklin Arias to the airport myself to get Joe Ryan here.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's so tough because we've seen Peyton Tolley and how electric he is. Like, I obviously don't think you still trade all three of them for Joe Ryan if he's involved, but I still would be more inclined to than not to trade Toley for Joe Ryan. It's interesting because Joe Ryan feels like a guy that's like sneakily young. He's sneakily old. Like,
how old is he?
29.
Let's see.
Like, he hasn't even hit his second contract yet.
Yeah, he is 29.
So you're trading for a 29-year-old Joe Ryan that you're going to have to pay. Like, and this is the calculus that you have to take. Like, obviously Joe Ryan's fantastic, but do you have enough faith in yourself to turn Peyton Toley into a Joe Ryan caliber pitcher? A 3.32 ERA this year, a 3.44 FIP in 157 innings. Like, that's so, like, I don't know. I said that I'm more inclined to than not still pull the trigger on a deal like that, but it's an interesting discussion to have. I mean, it's something that we can dive into once we do get into the off season, but like, something's got to give here. And especially like, they need another frontline starter. That much is so abundantly clear. Like, you love what you got out of Giolito and Bayo this year. Bayo, I think, is like a fine low end number two. Like really high end number three. Giolito is going to hit the opt out clause in his contract with the innings pitched. From there, who knows where things go? Like, I assume he's going to opt out in search of more years for more money. But like, every time they've won a World Series, they have had a two headed monster at the front of their rotation. Like, mm-hmm. I just think that's a necessity in today's big leagues to win a World Series. Having just not an ace and a number two, like a 1A and a 1B. And Garrett Crochet and Joe Ryan would like certainly be that.
Luckily for us, the front office, the free agent pitching market is pretty much at an all-time high.
Oh, no, it's good this year. The hitting market is trash.
Yeah, the hitting market is really bad. So
yeah, this year it's like Gallen, Framber Valdez,
Framber, Cease, King. So there are some options there, and I think, I don't know, Framber Valdez is interesting because that whole thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of out with that after that.
I know we're thinking of the same thing.
Yeah. The cross up thing, he was like, oh, there's no way I did that on
what? Purpose. Me? Like,
all right, man. They think I what? I don't even know what that word crossed up. What? I had zero alcoholic beverages tonight, and I do not smoke marijuana, good sir. Like, that was pretty much Framber Valdez's response to that. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, I'm kind of out on him. I do like Michael King. Dylan Cease has been bad this year. Zach Gallen has been better as of late. But even he, is he a guy that you're going to give huge money to? I guess we'll see, maybe. But, like, I don't know. I think a trade is still there. So there has to be a trade somewhere. Like, there's not enough room for all these guys.
I agree. Both on the pitching side and offensively. So
yeah, I think I'm more comfortable stashing guys in AAA pitching wise, like Hunter Dobbins, Richard Fitz, take your pick, like Kyle Harrison, even Connelly Early. Like, I don't think him or Toley are probably starting next year on the big league roster. Maybe Toley. But like those are guys like you can more easily stash pitching depth in AAA because, like we said, you always need pitching depth. Like, at some point, it's like, all right, we've got 47 outfielders and they're all major league caliber. Like, you always need pitching. You don't always need outfielders.
I guess it's worked out given the Roman injury, sure. But even still, you have some other guys who are still in AAA that I think could be helping a major league team right now.
Oh, absolutely. Like, we mentioned Justinson Garcia. Mm-hmm. I think he could be helping a major league team. I think Christian Campbell could be helping a major league team.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there. The only other thing I had was on Justin Slayton real quick, because he's been pretty bad since his return from injury. And you don't really have, besides Garrett Whitlock, you don't really have a righty that you feel like you can lean on in that bullpen as the playoffs approach here.
No, it's weird. Like, obviously, it's been really ugly for Slayton. I mean, they used him, in the fifth inning yesterday?
Yeah, that game was a mess.
Yeah, they used him in the fifth inning yesterday. And, like, I mean, that's not where you want to be using your high-leverage guy.
Not quite.
Like, I'm trying to find the number since he got back from the injured list, which was on August 29th. It is a holy shit. 11-8-1 ERA in 5 1/3 innings pitched. It's just, it's even a 6.89 FIP. It's just not good at all. And it's honestly kind of a little bit of a similar problem where the secondaries are just, where the secondaries are just completely failing him. Mm-hmm. Like, he just cannot find a consistent secondary to use. Like, the curveball has become, and it's totally that Corbin Carroll, I think it was, home run that got hit off of the curveball in Arizona, where it was just the worst curveball of all time. Like, it's definitely just that is sticking out in my head. But, like, it just, it looked like when he was talking to himself on the mound, and everyone's like, this guy's a fucking psychopath, I love him. Like, the curveball was disgusting there, and it just hasn't been good at all. And it's all the way up to a 5.02 ERA. When he returned, it was a 3.33, still a 3.80 FIP. So you kind of hope that he can kind of find it in there somewhere. But like I said, since he's been back, it's still a FIP over 6. So like at this point, is Justin Slayton on your playoff roster? How can he be?
I don't think so, but it's like, who else do you have in the bullpen as a righty? Like, Greg Weissert, I still don't feel confident.
It's going to have to be Zach Kelly. What do you have for me? Like, it's going to have to be mix and match with these guys. Like, mm-hmm. You just can't, like, if this continues, you just can't put a guy who has an 11 ERA since he's been healthy. And healthy, we know he had that abbreviated stint on the injured list. Like, I don't know what the solution is, because like you said, there isn't anybody else that where you can say, like, all right, we need to, it's the sixth inning, we need to bridge the gap, we need a righty to bridge the gap between where we are now and Garrett Whitlock and Aroldis Chapman. Where do you turn? Like, it is Weissert.
This all goes back to the trade deadline, where Steven Matz has been pretty solid, but you didn't have another left-hander in your bullpen. Like,
if you're talking about Toley being in the bullpen, that's another lefty.
Exactly. And
like, is that just what you do? Is it just like, all right, I guess we just got to go lefty here. Like, we got to go Toley.
Yeah, maybe, but it's just, you're leaving yourself wide open to get killed. Like, I don't like the idea of having such a left-handed bullpen, because you want to be way more balanced. Like, really, I think you only need like 3-4 at most left-handed bullpen guys, and they have way more than that.
Yeah, I mean, Chapman doesn't count because he's your closer.
But right. It's
what? Matz, Bernardino, Matz, soon to be Toley.
Mm-hmm.
Murphy. Yeah, Murphy. Well, Murphy they sent down. Murphy got sent down. Harrison. Mm-hmm. But yeah. There's more that we're missing for sure. What more? I think, who the hell is it?
Yeah, I'm blanking on it too.
Let's see. But either way, the point remains, like, it's too lefty heavy, especially when you don't have righties that can get outs besides Garrett Whitlock. Like, mm-hmm. Weissert's been okay in stretches. I wouldn't trust Zach Kelly throwing batting practice to a high school team.
Well, Wilson.
He is the most forgettable guy ever, I think. He vaguely
in like the sixth inning and you're like, oh yeah, he's still on the team.
Yeah, he like vaguely resembles Liam Hendricks.
I will say, like, he's been pretty good all season. Like,
yeah, he's been solid. He's just a very forgettable guy. Like, he's, mm-hmm. Which is fine. And you're like lefty middle reliever. Like, if you want him to be forgettable, like,
I agree. Yeah, that's really the only other thing I had, aside from previewing the Yankees series. Did you have anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Do you want to go game by game or just rattle them off?
Let's just rattle them off. We've all seen the Yankees enough this year that we don't need to dive in.
All right, so game one is Friday when you will be listening to this. It's at 7:10 p.m. Lucas Giolito versus Luis Gil. How are we feeling about that? I don't know. I don't think Gil's very good.
No, I don't either.
That's about all I have to say.
It kind of just goes back to what we've been talking about this entire episode. Like the Yankees don't necessarily scare me, but I also just don't know where the offense is going to come from.
I agree. Okay. Game two, Saturday, 4:10 p.m. That is Brian Baio versus Max Fried. Interesting matchup there. Max Fried, obviously a lefty. The Red Sox kill lefties, so we'll see how that goes.
Yes, but have you seen the stats about Max Fried since he befriended that squirrel?
No.
He has been really good since befriending the squirrel on against the Red Sox. Yeah.
People haven't been talking enough about the squirrel bump.
Yes, yeah. 27 innings pitched since he befriended the squirrel of a 1.67 ERA.
I'm not sure if that squirrel, because the last I saw it, it was stuck in a video board.
No, that's the squirrel bump. And also, sure, you could call it the squirrel bump, but he had also been an abomination. His ERA had jumped up from a 2.13 to a 3.26 in the last month leading up to that start against the Red Sox. He goes 6 shot, allowing 4 hits, striking out 7, walking 3. Like, he got right against you. Like, so that's one, like, yeah, like, they kill lefties, but also the last time you saw him, he absolutely diced you up, and he's been nailed since he did that. So, I don't know, like, obviously Brian Baio dominates the Yankees too. Oh, you know what? With that being said, the entering Ken Moore, play of the series. The play of the series last episode did voided because Dustin May did not make a start because he's injured. The entering Ken Moore play of the series for this weekend, Red Sox versus Yankees Saturday at 4:10 p.m. under.
Okay. You're welcome. Okay. I like that one. And the series finale is unfortunately Sunday Night Baseball. And that is Garrett Crochet versus Will Warren. And that's a 7:10 start.
Yeah, I believe the last time we saw Garrett Crochet against the Yankees was, did he pitch in that series in New York? Yeah, he did, right?
I think so.
Okay, so the last time we saw him at Fenway Park was when he absolutely mowed through the Yankees lineup for 9 innings and then gave up the game-tying bomb to Judge. Mm-hmm. I think, and everyone listening to this should think, that Garrett Crochet versus Will Warren should be a pretty easy win. And a win nonetheless. And I stand by that. Like, that should be a game that they won. Last time out against the Yankees, it was 7 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, 11 strikeouts. And that's just what Garrett Crochet does. Like I said, we're not feeling great about the first two matchups offensively. So you're going to be looking at Garrett Crochet to go out there and do what Garrett Crochet does, put his nuts on the table and say, there's a reason why I'm the best pitcher in baseball. Oh, the second best pitcher in baseball. That's not Paul Skeens. And do just that and deliver on Sunday Night Baseball. I've got 1 out of 3.
Whoa. 1 out of 3.
Yeah. I think they lose the first two and then win Sunday.
Yeah, we both predicted sweep last time against the D-backs, and that did not work out.
Yeah, you talked me into it. So don't let me talk you into 1 out of 3.
I'm not going to. I'm going to go 2 out of 3. I think they win the Giolito game and the Crochet game.
So lose in the middle game.
Yeah, and I'm going to tail that underpick, so I think it's going to be like a 2-0 game or something like that.
I like that.
This might be the end of the lefty killer Linsanity run.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. Yeah, I mean, and like, sure, like, they're lefty killers, but I think Max Fried is like a different class of lefty.
Yeah, maybe lefty killer proof, is that? I don't know.
Maybe. I feel like I'd have to look at the numbers, but I'm not going to do that right now. But yeah, I could say good. Like, if there were to be guys that were lefty killer proof, I feel like he would be one of them.
Mm-hmm. I would say Crochet is probably another one.
Yeah.
Scooble.
Mm-hmm. A lot of good lefties.
Yeah. I think that'll about...
Diced up the Red Sox this year.
Who did?
Fried in his 2 outings against the Red Sox.
Oh.
The last one that I gave 6 innings shut.
Right.
4 hits, 7 Ks. And then back in June at Fenway, they lost. It was 7 innings, six hits, two earned, nine Ks.
Yeah, and that was even before the squirrel bump, so who knows?
Yeah.
That's what happens now.
Before he befriended a squirrel. I mean, these are the hard-hitting statistics and analysis that you're only going to get on the Entering Ken Moore podcast. Masataki Yoshida can hit leadoff, but only if he brings back Macho Man as his walk-up song.
Mm-hmm.
And Max Fried getting the squirrel bump.
And bring back the Scherzi wall. And yes, I think we're doing a Scherzi wall update every single episode from here on out.
A new player that we want for their for a Scherzi.
Stay tuned for whoever we decide is next. But yeah, I think that'll about do it for this episode. So as always, thanks so much for listening, and we'll check in with you guys again next time.
See ya.